Welcome to Machine Learning, How the World Works. It seems like every day now we're getting new news about technology that is going to be both disruptive and transformative. But if we think about technology, I think we have an era of lost technology, largely due to the fact that AI was originally, its potential was originally discovered in around World War II, and the technology was developed for the digital machine, and the mathematics existed for the neural nets. But because it was considered a secure technology, it was largely obscured and lost. And then in the 70s, that technology reemerged, but there were critics of that for whatever reason that said that AI couldn't deliver, and we largely went for probably four decades. Let's see, no, 23. Yeah, I would say probably in about 2000, the AI, 2010, maybe AI came back. So probably about four decades where technology for AI was largely obscured. And now with OpenAI and large language models, the technology that existed probably around the 1950s is starting to reemerge. And I'm going to make a case argument for that now. So one of the greatest inventions was the digital machine. And why was the digital machine so important? Because it was the Turing machine that was designed by Alan Turing that made it possible to evaluate state grammar. So you could put a grammar in a graph, and then through reading the grammar and then applying different functions on that grammar, evaluating the grammar, let's say whether the grammar was recursive or it went down different branches and converged, the algorithms, the computer algorithms, could be evaluated by that grammar. And hence, we could create a syntax which the grammar could be evaluated, and that became a programming language. So Alan Turing was one of the first individuals to build a programmable language for a digital machine. That was a big breakthrough. But you would think just on that basis that the commercialization and marketing and so forth would pick up on the power of digital computation and programmable language. But it didn't. It seems like that things were incrementally released, and the languages were difficult to learn, and there were lots of rules, and the compilers were difficult to understand when there were errors. And so this era of complexity and craftsmanship seems to have emerged. But what happened with the neural nets? Well, neural nets were always there, and the idea of scaling those nets was part of Turing's thought process. And when he built his thinking machine, it's not clear if he conceptualized that the there would be general intelligence that would be possible, that would begin to be a behavior as the models became larger and larger. And that was the interesting thing about the model, large language models, as the more information that it was gained, the more accurate the model became. And that seemed to be a contradiction, but the net required lots and lots of information to generalize and get generalized information. So as these models are getting bigger, that's what Sam Altman is saying, is these models are getting bigger. They are becoming more capable. They're answering questions better. And they are able to solve logical puzzles. Now, if you think about what is a logic puzzle, it's logic inference, but it's also this process or strategy for looking for a certain combination of sequence that will work. We do that in linear programming. We can solve that discretely through sets of equations, or you can solve for statistically for two variables. And now with deep learning, you can solve it for multiple variables. So before, statistics probably did really good for two variables. Then you had different machine learning algorithms that were offering multiple variables, like logistic regression, which was using logit algorithms. So we go back to the idea of neural nets and grammars. If you have now you have a finite graph that can be traversed, that can express a grammar that's both have recursive elements to it and can be self-referential, it can then be created into a Chomsky normal grammar, and then, you know, we see regular expression grammars, which are a form of these early ideas of evaluating grammars to evaluate different expressions. Okay, those are great, and we still use the regular expressions with memory storage and recursion and pattern matching. But the question is, was what would we consider a neural net? Well, we can consider a neural net as another form of grammar. It thinks differently than we do, but the grammar which it's trying to evaluate is everything. So it is a computational algorithm for everything. Now, that's interesting. We think that way that because there are different mathematical problems that we can now apply to whether or not it can be solved mathematically. And so you can look at a problem and say, well, could this be solved mathematically? And if it can, then a program can be written for it. And if a program can be written for it, the neural net can evaluate the grammar of that program and make predictions on what it will do. All right, so when we look at the hypothesis problem, this is more along the way of patterns of human perception. Now, it would be interesting if machines can start forming hypotheses, but for human beings, we observe some phenomena where a problem we were investigating. We formulate a question relating to that phenomena we observed. We generate possible answer to that question, and that is called the hypothesis. The hypothesis should be a statement that can be tested and potentially proven false, the null hypothesis. And then the alternate hypothesis. So you have two possible things, that outcomes. We can ensure that the hypothesis is testable and falsifiable. This means it can be tested using scientific methods, and that the evidence can be gathered to support or disprove the hypothesis. Now, based on the hypothesis and logical reasoning and previous theories or observation, hypotheses should not be random guesses, but should be informed by existing knowledge. So that's how human beings make judgments. We don't just look at the data and then start making random guesses. We use a frame of reference, we use existing theories, and within those frameworks, we can accept or begin to form hypotheses. So we're not going to go outside the realm of existing knowledge, which is interesting because a machine can go beyond the realm of existing knowledge and existing theories, and it can create new discoveries. And so that's what Sam Altman's saying when he believes that AI will begin to make many scientific discoveries. Because the way science currently working is it's incrementally improving on existing theories. And those theories are largely tied to things that make money. And so they're not just being discovered for the search of truth. They're discovered to potentially make a profit. So AI is being increasingly integrated into scientific study to augment and accelerate research. Now, that will not mean that the scientists will accept what the generated hypothesis, or the scientists will be generating their own hypothesis and designing the experiments and collecting data and large data sets. So they're still, the machine will be constrained to the boundaries that the scientist is applying. So it won't be given the ability to create experiments, to run, gather data, and process outside of its parameters given by the scientist, because it's going to cost money to run the machines, it's going to cost money for the electricity, the labor, and so forth. And so AI will be narrowly constrained to what the scientist wants. And so largely, human bias will still continue, or human perception, human containment, this idea of containment by humanity over the machine will still be there. That will slow down scientific advancement, but it will give a sense of control, and then combine it with fear that the machine will discover something terrible, and that something terrible will be to the detriment of humanity. So it will be required for scientists to narrowly confine what the machine can do. Now, the idea of breakthroughs. How are we going to get scientific breakthroughs then? Well, we'll need new theories on how biology, how chemistry works, how genetic engineering works, and then we look at potential solutions. Like, one of the problems that we see right now in the market is there are solutions can be found for rare diseases, but there's no market there, not enough volume to justify the investment. So some of this research gets canceled or shelved, or it doesn't hit the mainstream and it doesn't become available to the consumer. Over the decade, there has been significant breakthroughs in the integration of AI into the scientific discovery. So that's the part I think that Altman possibly could be implying, is that what if the machine discovers correlations in the data, and then it begins to be able to, using generalized intelligence, explain what the data is saying and formulate new discoveries and theories about how things are working. Then scientists, human scientists, can use that information to publish those discoveries and transform the way we think about our world. So one of the ideas is geometric deep learning. This is, again, a statistical method. If you continue to work at something long enough, your accuracy will go up, even though you have high failure. So, let the machine go through millions or billions or trillions of failures, but through those failures, they will discover the it will discover and enhance the accuracy. So that's the geometric statistical approach to discovery. I think some of the discovery, and I would say most of the discovery, is by observation, by divine inspiration, and that as God reveals, or we discover God's patterns, or the complex patterns of the universe and our world, then we begin to formulate theories, and those theories then become discoveries, and we can then look for data. We can make those discoveries from data or from our own inspiration, our consciousness, our divine connection with God, and we can get this enlightenment necessary to make these discoveries. Sometimes it may come in the form of a dream or an analogy or an observation. The integration of AI methods into the scientific discovery offers numerous benefits to scientists throughout the research process. And hopefully we'll start seeing more publications that are related to machine discovery, machine hypothesis, designed experiments created by the machine, and information that's collected. And that information then could be fed to people. Now, I do like the idea of Alan Turing's recursive function. Well, he called a recursive function in terms of itself, where the computation eventually terminates. So it keeps referring to itself, and it processes it, and it eventually terminates. The Turing machine can calculate any such function, meaning it can solve problems that can express as recursive functions. And because it has this ability to call recursively, it has the tapestry of the infinity, and that tapestry of infinity means things like fractals or different forms of chaos theory, and it should be able to do things like predict weather, predict thermodynamics, and like even where they apply to Sierpinski fractal, predict the height of a flame. So things that we think are very random may not be as random as we think as we begin to apply the Turing machine to things like fractals, different patterns in cellular automa, like Stephen Wolfram. I would think that he's doing a lot of that type of work right now, thinking about Turing machines and infinite grammars and the tapestries of biology, chemistry, brains, all these things that he covered in the New Science. But according to Turing's machine, suppose it could be built, this universal machine, it would be capable of evaluating any function and any grammar. A recursively enumerated language is a set of strings that can be enumerated by a Turing machine, where the machine may halt and accept strings in the language, but it may also loop infinitely for strings not in the language. The Turing machine can accept recursive enumerable language, meaning it can recognize and enumerate the strings in the language. Okay, and the way that machinery operates mechanically or electromechanically is through digital ones and zeros. And then they form the basis of of the different types of logic gates and data structures and data control variables that were commonly known today in programming languages. Now, you can simulate in the neural net all the logic gates. So the Turing machine would be able to evaluate binary patterns and that could be converted into the process into the microprocessor as part of the machine and the memory. The Turing machine could perform any computation that could be described by an algorithm. It serves as a standard by comparing computational systems and is considered Turing complete. The Church-Turing thesis provides a test to determine which algorithms can effectively have an effective method of computation. The Turing machine has played a crucial role in the theory of computation and computer science. I studied Turing machines and different grammars in computer theory. Really, it was hard to believe that something as simple as a Turing machine could evaluate all grammars. I mean, the claim was just incredible. But now as I've studied artificial intelligence and looked at beginning to think about the von Neumann architecture and the digital machine, I'm starting to believe again that the Turing machine was capable of evaluating algorithms. The universal Turing machine, as described by Alan Turing, can perform any computation that can be described by an algorithm. It can calculate any recursive function, decide any recursive language, and accept any recursive enumerable language. Now, when you see now that computers are now writing their own algorithms, and we have Turing machines that can evaluate those algorithms, what will happen next is we approach quantum computing. Is now these Turing machines are not going to be small electromechanical von Neumann machines, but they're going to be higher dimension machines with solutions vastly more complex than anything that we've seen. So we're in a position for usage of quantum machines, like with D-Wave's Sanctuary AI, where they're training robotic reinforcement learning algorithms to do different tasks. Then we take these machines and start writing billions and trillions of algorithms, and then you have to have a machine that learns from these algorithms or evaluates and understands them. Well, we have these quantum machines that are capable of that, performing those feats. Anyway, those are some of my thoughts today on Turing. He definitely was a man.